Well, good afternoon, and again, thank you very much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be on NPR. So my name is Tim Fitzgerald. I am your elected county clerk. I'm one of your six electeds in the executive branch of county government. So you have the auditor, the assessor, the clerk, the treasurer, the prosecutor, and the sheriff. We make up the executive branch of county government. What we do is pretty straightforward. We do the day-to-day business of the county. So I run my office as executive-level management. There's no politics in the office. It's executive-level management, executive-level leadership. It's people. It's processes. It's budgets. It's relationships and strategic thinking. And that's what I do. That's what I bring to the table. I spent 30 years in the Marine Corps. I was a director of operations for all Marine, Army, Navy, Air Forces down at Camp Pendleton, 55,000 personnel force, so I ran all operations. My last tour, I also commanded at the squadron level, at the task force, and at the platoon level. But my last tour before I retired after 30 years in the Marine Corps was one of my four combat tours. I was a chief of staff of all NATO forces in Helmand Province in Afghanistan. Relationships, strategic thinking. That's what I bring to the office, the ability to look out in the future, see where the office has to go. The clerk's office basically is, as a member of the executive branch, I execute the law. I don't make the law. That's what your legislators do. I don't rule on the law. That's what your judicial branch does. As your clerk, I execute the day-to-day law and the orders that come from the court and at the laws that are passed by the legislators. So I do that by executive level management. I have five different departments. I have a finance and an archives, a juvenile, a court services, and a customer services department. We handle all the financial court matters and all administrative court matters. That way there's no question on who's handling money or documents when a court and a judge makes a decision. Judges in the court don't touch the money or the paperwork, it comes back to me in the executive branch to execute that order. And I think that's checks and balances. We have three branches of government in our county. It's a very proper and effective way to run a day-to-day business. So I have 169,575 legal files. I used to have 238,463 files, but we're paying off-site storage for that. One of the things I've been doing in my clerk's office that I'm very proud of with my people is modernizing. So we digitized all our legal records. We have records back to 1878. We have digitized all those legal records, either on microfilm or on the current capabilities. Then I ask the court's permission to destroy a record. The court says, yeah, you can, as long as you have that record intact digitally, you can destroy the paper record, which eliminates storage, and we have saved the taxpayers substantial amounts of money by bringing everything back in here onto the county campus storage area and or having it digitized. I do $1 million a month in legal financial transactions on behalf of the county. We do 8,000 sheets of paper a day, scan, document, digitize those papers. So my staff is incredibly busy. We handle 11,200 customers. So with those numbers, you get a feel for the volume. So think of a spoked wheel. That hub in the center is the clerk's office. On the outside of that hub is the court, Superior Court, who I work directly with. I support Superior Court directly. The prosecutor, the public defender, counsel for defense, the sheriff's department, pretrial services, and detention services to jail. They all feed in and out of my office. Everything starts with the clerk's office. Everything ends with the clerk's office.
No district court?
I do not handle district court. They have their own clerk office. District court is considered a court of limited jurisdiction. They handle mainly misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors. My office handles all felony. I handle all eight case types, that being criminal cases, civil cases, domestic, which is family law cases, guardianship and paternity. We handle adoption and probate. We handle civil commitment, voluntary and involuntary, very difficult category. We have truancy, youth at risk, and juvenile. So I also support the juvenile court, which, as you know, works directly for Superior Court. So I handle all that.
Seems like you'd have to have a teaching function to teach about all the things that you do here for in terms of interacting with the county.
The thing I like about the job the most is I got a bachelor's history with engineering from Virginia Military Institute, VMI. I got my master's degree in national resource strategy, the ability to walk out into the economy and look at industry and how it would help in a national emergency situation, what industry can do for us. So I learned about processes, lean management. I learned about how using finding people and putting them in the best location with their skill set. Again, the most important asset in my office are my people. My people are great. We have a great environment in the clerk's office. We have a lot of fun in the office. I got a bunch of superstars. They're good public servants working for the county, and they do a very good job, and they work hard. They work very hard. So that's my education. And then my years in the Marine Corps with executive level management, the ability to delegate, to run staffs. When I was in Afghanistan, the staff was 440 people from seven different countries. You know, Estonia, we had Danes, we had United Kingdom British officers. So I had a chance to work with different countries and their processes. And my job was to make sure the whole system ran smoothly. I'm not an expert in any category. My people are the experts in the categories. They run the day-to-day function in their divisions. I run the day-to-day functions for the office.
So when you get together with your fellow county clerks in the state of Washington, what are the issues you guys talk about?
Wow, a lot of them. Modernization. Most of us need to modernize our offices because the volume of workload is substantial. That's one of the things I've taken great pride in for the clerk's office is that I have been modernizing our office. A couple examples. When I took over, people said, Tim, you know, money order, cashier's check, cash, just got no credit cards. I went to work on that. And now in the courthouse, you can do debit and credit card in the courthouse. Additionally, I talked to the court about allowing offenders to use debit cards because most of them have debit cards. And that's how people pay with stuff. And they're coming in saying, I have to walk all the way down to a bank, pay extra money to get a cashier's check, and then come back and pay off my fine. It just seems like a harsh way of doing business. I said, you are right. You have a debit card, we'll get these transactions. I asked the court to change their local court rule. I said, hey, court, you know, I handle the financial matters. Work with me on this. The court and I have a great relationship. The 12 independent elected judges and I get along very, very well. And we work very closely on many matters. And we do it as a team in Spokane, which I think is very, very critical. Not always the case statewide, but in Spokane, we have a great team between the court and the clerk's office. So they changed that rule. So modernization is a big issue for most of the counties. Additionally, we're going to Odyssey now. Odyssey is the newest case management system. The last time the state did this was back in the early 1980s when they went to a system called SCOMIS, which is what we currently use today. That's the Superior Court Operations Management Information System, or Superior Court Management Information System. That's how you document all your legal files on a statewide system electronically. And so now we're changing that system, and it's one of the largest computer programming changes that Spokane has made, probably 25-some-odd years, and we do that this November. So again, with my executive-level management, my understanding of people, processes, budgets, my relationships that I have built, this is critical. So the clerks talk about that, and then we also talk about laws. How laws are impacting us doesn't make sense. An example would be legal financial obligations. The law doesn't say anything about partial payments. But I believe that if a person's making partial payments because that's the best they can do, then that's the best they can do. We need to work with that. So I talked to my fellow clerk, just funny that you asked that question. I am the director of legislation for the Clerks Association. And so I go to Olympia every legislative session. And I present bills, and I've gotten two bills passed out of the past three sessions. I've had two bills passed, changing nine different RCWs to make it more efficient for the public and better serve the county and the state for the clerks. And that was, you know, that to us is very important.
You mentioned the Odyssey program. I'm thinking, you know, often technology changes like that often bring big issues. Are you confident that this is going to work really well for the county and be better in the system you're already working with?
I think there'll be some growing pains. It's a very detailed system. We need this kind of capability. We need the detail because we're asked for data a lot. The current system, certain data isn't tracked, and the community has expectations of legal data, legal information being available, and it's not available. And if it is available, it's in different silos, and it's very hard to track down. This system will automate our ability to document a litany of legal categories. It's a drop-down system. It's a web-based system, so the problem is it takes a little more time as you drop down and add in information. But by using drop bars, once my staff gets efficient with that, and once they learn how to do that, I think they'll be very effective and will pick up a lot of speed down the road and have more data available. One of the biggest aspects that Odyssey does is it allows the court to look around other counties for legal information. we need this desperately, because if somebody has cases in three different counties, a judge is sitting there making a very important decision, but they only get partial information. And it's important that the clerks enable the court to have more access to more information for a better judicial decision. So, and on a final, for Odyssey, I've been working this for over a year and a half, 18 months. Think of manning, training, equipping. So I got all my right personnel in the right spots now. So I'm manned where I need to be at. I have bought the equipment. I budgeted for it 18 months ago, working with the county IT department. We have the equipment in place. We installed it early so my staff could work on the equipment, work with it, so it wouldn't be another add-on challenge to them when we went to the new programming. Now they know how to use the equipment. It's just the actual program itself they'll have to learn. And now we're in training. And training started last Monday, 9 July. We train. We are training our trainers. And then we get into September and October. There'll be blocks of training for 15 people on my staff each time. And Ashley Cowan and her court administrative staff will be training one day per week. I'll be training 4 days per week because Odyssey is 90% clerk business. And so we have a full-fledged training program in place to enable our people to learn and get comfortable before we hit the switch. The switch is 5 November.
So the county had an $8 or $9 million budget deficit heading into last year.
Correct.
And there are various reasons for mm-hmm. that. How did the clerk's office get hit by that? And as you go forward, are there worries about financing for your office?
There are always concerns about the budget. I'm very proud of how we did that. A couple things. That's a great question, too, because that's one of the things that, you know, the public needs to know. We had public hearings, but not a lot of folks showed up. So my office was tasked with $195,000, $194,000 and change, but called $195,000 worth of cuts. 96% of my budget is people, which means to make the budget cuts I was required to make, you have to cut people. And I said, I'm not doing that. I'm a manager. I'm an elected official. And the most important asset in my office are my people. You don't cut your people. You owe them some loyalty to protect them in their jobs. And you have to do your job. So I told my office to gather all my people up and said, we're going to do two things. We have 10 statutory duties and a ton of other. There's like 400 different codes and administrative codes and laws out there that I have to follow. But I have 10 constitutional statutory duties. I said, so we will do these 10 duties. We have to do these 10 duties. That's why we're here in the first place. Second, there'll be no pink slips. I will not cut a single person. I said, staff, you don't worry about it. I'll figure it out. You do your day-to-day jobs. I'll handle the budget cuts. I put together, and I got some support on this, so I don't sound like I'm bragging, but I put together a very creative budget process on how I did it. I restructured my supervisors. I had a supervisor retiring. I restructured that position to a lower-paying position that would do the same functions roughly, but just be a lower-paying position. And I restructured some of the other dynamics inside the office for supervisors. The reason being is I don't need supervisors supervising supervisors. I need the workers. They're the ones that do the work. That's what I need to protect. So I restructured my supervisors with a huge cost savings. And by doing that, I was able to demonstrate to the county commissioners that I put some effort into this. I made some other changes in our processes on how we did things for some cuts. And I presented what's called turnover money to them, money that hadn't been used yet that I'd been, saving. And I showed that to them. And the county commissioners are on record saying that one of the very best briefs they received was mine, that I had the most creative, innovative brief that they received. And so they approved my budget cuts, which came out when all said and done something like $7,500. I didn't take much of a cut at all in actual cash. I just did some restructuring. So I still do my statutory duties with no problem at all. Nobody in my office got a pink slip, so I protected all my people, and we can still do the job. So that's where we sit right now. One of the challenges of the Legal Financial Obligation Program, that program has been going into bankruptcy for years. I've been working on devising a plan inside the county to enable that program to go from the red to the black and be annually sustainable. Working with the budget officer, Tanya Wallace, and John Dixon, the operations officer, and Jerry Gimmel, the chief executive officer, we believe we have a plan now that will take this program out of bankruptcy, put it into an annual sustainability capability where it will just sustain itself annually from now on. And then I'll be presenting that to the county commissioners this upcoming budget process. Mm. So budget-wise, it's been a very good year for the clerk's office. We've been very successful in what we've tried to accomplish, and we're very happy with that.
We refer to LFOs, and I've covered a few of these, but yeah. Explain for people what an LFO is.
Okay, so an LFO is a legal financial obligation where an individual is in court, and the court has determined that they owe money for the offense that was committed. Legal financial obligations are divided up into two parts. There's restitution and non-restitution. Restitution is the amount of money that the court will order an offender to pay a victim. So let's say you're down in the street, you have a bad night, you smash somebody's store window. Well, that store owner has to get up and running the next day to continue his business or her business. So they replace the window with out-of-pocket money. And when the defendant then goes to court, the court makes a decision and says you owe that amount of money. You will owe that owner the money for smashing their window for $1,000. You owe that. On that money, though, it accrues a 12% interest rate each year that money's owed. And that's called restitution. Non-restitution are fees that now initially a defendant, now an offender because they've been ruled on, will have to pay back. So they owe $200 for a court filing fee because they had to go in and use court time. They will owe $100 for a DNA sample. And then they'll owe $500 to the crime victim assessment penalty, which goes to the prosecutor. So and that's used to help crime victims. So they'll be ordered to pay those. The court can order other amounts, too. They can order a $50 public defender fee. They can order other fees and assessments. All of that is called non-restitution, and the offender has to pay that also. What we have seen is that for some of these folks, it puts them in a debt for a lifetime, and they can't get out of it. And so the legislature passed, they passed a bill last year, 1783, which eliminated the interest on non-restitution. So that 12% interest on non-restitution is eliminated. The 12% on restitution remained. And then there was some good decisions made by the Judges Association, the Clerks Association, all the advocate groups that were very active. There are so many to name, I can't name them all, but many of the advocate groups worked very hard on this bill to make it happen. And I think it's a good bill in that we eliminated doing DNA every single time. Because once you have DNA, you don't need to do it 2, 3, 4 times unless the sample gets lost or damaged or contaminated. Then to protect the offender, you ought to do it again. So they eliminate that $100 fee as automatic. And they started going through and helping the court with some because the court has some discretion on these fees. And they can make more they can make a judgment where they wouldn't assign a fee depending on a person's financial wherewithal. So there's hope. There's a light at the end of the tunnel now for offenders in the way we're trying to do LFOs now.
So how does reducing that 12% interest that you were able to charge on the LFOs, the non-restitution part, how does that hit your bottom line?
Oh, it hurts the county. It hurts the county because that puts the county in a situation. In essence, becomes kind of an unfunded mandate in that you still need to run a legal financial obligation program. Hence what I mentioned earlier, how excited I was working, knowing this bill is going to be passed because the clerks were in favor of the bill, knowing that this was going to be it passed, it was important that we plan ahead with some sustainability for our LFO program so we can still run it on behalf of the court. So, yeah, it does put the counties – it does make things – the counties are losing a fair amount of revenue.
Can you project how much?
Oh, wow.
Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands?
Yeah, it would be tens of thousands. I have to go back and look at the numbers. The way it's done, it's also split up a certain manner too. For example, the interest on non-restitution is divided up 4 different ways. So 25% goes to the court improvement fund or a court fund. 25% goes to the general fund of the county. So the county gets 2 25% blocks, so 50%. The remaining 50% is also split in half. But those two halves go back to the state. So now the state is also losing revenue. So the state and the counties are losing revenue. However, in the interest of justice, in the interest of doing what is right, I think this is one of those losses that we have to find fixes to. And I believe that's the right thing to do. There are some financial situations where the counties will have to accept some losses to do what's right by the public, do what's right by the community. And I think this is one of those cases.